Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. We had a little bit of delay getting started there, a minute or so, so let's get going. Tonight's show is, again, on metaphysics and spirituality and scientific issues and all of that put together, trying to explain why life is, as well as other related facts and issues. I thought tonight we'd deal with the challenges of leading a more spiritual life. And I've done shows, you know, on trying to be a spiritual disciple and trying to overcome certain problems people might have. This is a more general concept tonight, dealing really with, to begin with, the idea that there are two ways to, we'll say, grow in a spiritual sense. One of them is through the heart chakra in one of three of the bodies that humans can and do use. And then the other is through the crown chakra. And I'll explain the differences for you right now so that we really know where we're going to start from. Now, this is going to lead into all kinds of other facts, but I think it's good to have a basis of what I mean by leading a spiritual life. And the first of those bases is that if a person is using the heart chakra in one of their three bodies as a conscious sense, conscious means that they can use the awareness of the sense as they choose to use it based upon their thinking to, we'll say, connect it to other information that they have either previously or at the same time are acquiring. And they can consciously do this without it being subconscious, which is something that their personality might do. So we're really talking about the self or self-consciousness when we're talking about leading a more spiritual life. It has to be done by that part of us. We can't do it subconsciously. And the first way to do this is through the heart chakra. And why is that? Well, the heart chakra gives us understanding of our Creator. And spirit is the thought of our Creator. So in order to understand the thought of our Creator, which is the beginning of the process of leading a more spiritual life, we have to become more self-conscious or conscious through ourself of the information that is entering and leaving our heart chakra. Now, what that information is the information that's coming into our other lower five senses, then joined with our understanding of our Creator or God. That's how we start to live a more spiritual life. Some people do this through a religion in some circumstances and through the tremendous number of ways that some religions espouse methods and methodologies as well as services that people can do in correspondence with their religious understandings. And so this helps some people to lead a more spiritual life in gaining understanding about God. This is what it is about. Religion is a sort of structured or organized way to gain an understanding about God, and that's the beginning of it. You might say, well, that sounds pretty interesting, but what's the challenges about it? Well, the challenges at the beginning of the process is that instead of being subconscious to the self, and doing this kind of like without knowingly, understandingly changing, but rather just doing it because of some feeling or some unrelated understanding. A person that is doing what I'm suggesting in a conscious way is building understanding and changing prior understandings. So we could say that this is a dynamic process of change. And when it's done through a religion, it's easier. Why is it easier? Well, because the religion gives you some of the structure and allows a person to, we'll say, make changes, but they're getting the combined wisdom of some earlier people who function in that religion in a way that was somewhat successful at leading a more spiritual life. And that's what usually attracts people to a certain religion, is they identify with those ways and means. Problems that entail, and the challenges that entail in using a religion for this, is that it doesn't allow much creativity on the part of the individual when you are borrowing a lot of the processes and structure from a religion. But that's a second part, and we're not quite there yet, of what the challenges are which require a more spiritual life. But nonetheless, for many people, this is the beginning of how they lead a more spiritual life. They join an organized religion of some sort, or follow it in some sort, even if they're not a member. They may be a sideline member, someone who doesn't necessarily go to meetings or do certain things, but they still follow the precepts of the religion itself. Understanding is the beginning of the process. Gaining understanding comes through the heart chakra. The heart chakra is taking the five lower chakras of a specific body and converting them into an awareness and understanding about God. The lower centers give you awareness and understanding about material things, but then the heart chakra, on a conscious level, takes it to the higher level. It's a wonderful thing. Now, if you do it in one particular body, the lowest, which is the etheric physical, then you gain an understanding about how to, we'll say, understand God as part of the material and, we'll say, electromagnetic aspects of the material world. And most religions pay attention to predominantly this element of God. Now you can say, well, why don't they deal with it through the astral heart chakra or the mental heart chakra? And the reason for that has to do with this, that for most people, it's many times easier to sense the information from the lower centers and convert it to an understanding about God on the physical world, in the physical world, because that information is so much more dominant in our senses than is the feelings of the astral world or the mental thinking thoughts of the monastic world. That's the issue. And most, but not all, religions really focus in on the etheric. So when someone says, well, I want to lead a more spiritual life, and they're involved with a structured religious institution of some sort, they usually mean that they want to understand how God functions within the physical world, and their later spiritual life, including their spiritual service, will be about material issues, like do people have enough food, shelter, clothing? Are people being discriminated or taken care of, discriminated against or taken care of in ways that make sense to them in terms of the following and the teachings of the religion? Are the things that they're doing helping people to live better and sometimes do the same in a physical sense? That's where religions tend to really, we'll say, shine, because it's easiest to do it. Now, the reason religions tend not to be very good at doing the same thing about how people feel and how people think is because as you move into those realms, the exterior senses become much more reduced, and a person has to advance themselves on a more individual level than through their religion in order to accomplish those kinds of changes. most people do not really understand what, we'll say, monastic spiritual thinking is. I mean, it's just beyond the concepts of what the religion works within, and most people don't function within those concepts very well. Now, you might say, well, then how come you do that? Well, I do that, and so do most, we'll say, non-large organized spiritual ways of functioning that are outside of organized religion. That's the difference, because you really have a significant schism, although there's nothing wrong with someone trying to lead a more spiritual life in an organized religious fashion. I don't want you to think in any way of saying things that are disparaging towards those people who do that or towards the religions themselves. They fill a great need for a great number of people. Now the challenge has become much greater. If someone says, well, okay, that's terrific for religions, but I listen to Wildlife Edge, and I read some of the books that this guy wrote. I read a lot of other books, and the structured religions that I have investigated are too material. They are one-sided, and they don't deal with the elements of God, which are significant and different from what the religion is mostly focused on. That's where the change in a person is significant. And we haven't even gotten to the second part, which I'm going to define right now, of how to lead a more spiritual life. And that's through the crown chakra. The heart chakra gives us an understanding of God, which is terrific. And the greater your understanding of God is, the more, in essence, a person is leading a spiritual life. However, the crown chakra is about co-creation. It's about being creative yourself of what? And that's creating virtue or light in form. And the form could be physical form. It could be astral. It could be mental. Or it could be even beyond that. But for us, we'll just include those three. And so it's a totally different ballgame if a person is choosing to lead a spiritual life and is not only trying to gain an understanding of God, but is attempting to co-create with God by being a creator themselves. This excludes almost all religions as I understand them. And I'm not going to say there isn't some religion out there that it doesn't exclude, but I don't know of any major religion, because I've studied a number of religions, had courses in comparative religion, etc. But beyond that, I've studied way beyond my college days. And I can tell you I haven't found a religion that really gets into the co-creation with God aspect. And you might say, well, what about people who want to become a priest or someone who wants to join the religion as one of the teachers or preachers of that religion? Isn't that co-creative? Not usually. Because, again, the structure of the religion dominates the person's thought and squelches a good deal of the crown chakra's use. There are rare exceptions to this, but those are the ones that really we're not, there's a few great, great personages in past times, maybe a few today, in an organized religion that do great, great, we'll say, amazing spiritual things from their positions. And from that standpoint, that's something they're doing, which is usually, though, not through their religion so much as in surpassing the religion itself. The religion is more or less like a stepping stone, or became a stepping stone for them to get to that level. I'm really going way ahead of myself at this point. Let's talk about what this co-creation is. Well, the heart chakra is helping us to understand. So if we understand, we ourselves gain a spiritual compass, and we gain this ability to connect one thought to another, to another, to another in an inclusive but expanding way, which we call consciousness. So our consciousness of self is constantly expanding as we grow through our heart chakra. It's a wonderful thing. There's a limitation to it, though, because if the heart chakra gets too far out of balance with the crown chakra, it creates a slowdown in its own development and eventually a cessation. So you've got to eventually take what you understand and apply it to service to others. People who don't do this start losing instead of gaining meaning in their existence and become usually challenged by life crises. Unusually, it develops a strange kind of karma in which the person makes for themselves a great deal of pressure and problems because most of their life is focused still too much on themselves, even though most of their focus has been in understanding God. It hasn't been on using this understanding to serve with God and to help serve all others who have yet to gain both the understanding or the level of service. So you see that this is a very interesting and paradoxical kind of development. The challenges are not just of gaining understanding, but in keeping that gaining and understanding in balance with one's co-creation or creation of virtue or co-creation with God. And if you don't do that, you may end up with more problems, more illnesses, more issues than you would have had you not started the process at all. However, I'm going to let you know right up front, my experience has showed me that almost everybody does this. So almost everybody has these glitches from time to time of gaining more understanding than they do of service. And the results can be harmful, sometimes producing some serious health problems and other karmically related issues. Sometimes they're called the diseases of mystics or the diseases of the spiritually informed, because that those are the people that are identified as being people who get these kinds of problems. Okay, so you might say, well, then how do you resolve all this? Well, we're going to talk about that. That's what tonight's show is really about. It's about getting some practical ideas into play and to apply them in ways that really will help as people move more into leading a more spiritual life. So, I hope this makes some sense. Where are the, let us start with the physical system, because I think this is really maybe the easiest one to start with, and also the one that you can move from becoming, if you already are involved in a religious, we'll say, following. You can expand it into even further development, and not without even necessarily doing anything and changing your involvement with anything religious. Or you can, if you've already, or you haven't been involved in a religious issue, or if you are in a change in that, then this may help as well. So let's see how we can develop in a reasonable way, a method that will help. The physical challenges of spiritual life have to do with what most people would consider to be a lessening of importance of the material world. It is not giving up the material world and going to live in a cave or some kind of nonsense of that sort. The few people who ever do that do so for various, we'll say, very specific reasons, and generally would not work. These reasons would not work for almost all the rest of us. So, unfortunately, those people have, in a historical sense, become looked at as some kind of model, and that's not the model I'm going to present this evening. The model I'm suggesting is one of reducing in terms of the level of importance the physical elements in relationship between the self and one's personality. Now, you could say, well, what's that relationship? Well, the personality is seeking to control. It does so by subconscious means, meaning that we don't understand what we're doing when we're doing a lot of what the personality wants us to do. And it seeks this control in order to give us a sense of security and a feeling of, we'll say, lacking fear and not having a sense of anxiety or a sense of foreboding or a sense of suffering or potential for suffering upon us. So a lot of it is related to the astral nature, even though it's very physical. The personality uses the cues from the astral body to evaluate a good deal of what's going on physically within our life. For the average person, this is not all that bad, because their concern is not about leading a more spiritual life, but leading a more pleasurable and comfortable physical life, one which may include certain elements of excitement from time to time, a sense of security, a sense of comradeship and involvement and interest with other people and other things, a fulfillment of a number of never-ending desires, along with the accumulation of quite a bit of material things relative to the standard of living of the person in the country they live in, etc. So this is how most people live, but that's not a spiritual life. That's a non-spiritual life, for the most part. And this is the normative way that the personality functions. It's there for that purpose. Now you could say, well, what about the soul mission? And aren't we here because of our soul? And the answer is absolutely. But the problem is that in order to get us going, you might say, and to trick us into finding God, we are put in a maze of complicated and sometimes threatening issues early in life to provide us with a contrast. Without the contrast, we wouldn't know what God is. And let me explain. The whole plan that the soul comes up with for human beings is based upon a system known as the process of illusionary overcoming, or we say lifting, the lifting of illusion. And the soul knows that if it came here, it would be facing the exact same problems that the human incarnate, which is a part of the soul but has this personality that the soul doesn't have, this personality is going to have to now face in the lower worlds where the soul has no sense. It's the senses and the type of energies in the lower worlds that produces the kinds of illusion that, unfortunately, the soul is unable to deal with. And the soul knows that if it came to physical earth and lived just as a human, it would be just as illusioned as the human. And it has tremendous empathy and concern for the human and says, how do I keep this human being alive? And how do I shift the human being from, which is part of me, it's part of the soul now, from being selfish to finding and leading a more spiritual life and trying to find its creator, which leads back to the soul as well. Well, the answer to this is peculiar, because it doesn't make much sense unless you understand the nature of the problem, which I'm trying to define. And that is that the soul has to create an entity which is unusually tough and has the tenacity to deal with the illusions that the person is going to find themselves in, because the illusions are contrary to life. What illusions are is information that is incomplete and wrong enough to cause the person to do things that will be contrary to the thought of God and eventually destructive to the life in the person. You see the problem? Okay, so here we got this thing going on that someone is really being put in a situation, a part of a soul, being put into a situation in which their life is immediately threatened by the fact that their senses don't work that well in that environment. They just don't, because even though there may have been hundreds of incarnations, it just takes that long to genetically, in a spiritual sense, build up a spiritual type of pool that builds a sense, or senses collectively, that accurately get enough information so that knowledge can be derived that's accurate enough and wise enough to keep a person alive. Okay, so we have this problem. And, of course, for animals, I'm going to go down a kingdom from human beings. For animals, the way souls deal with this is they create something called preconceived thought. We call it instincts. And this information is given to the animals, but then all the animals function pretty close to the same. There's not much difference. And the creative side of the crown chakra, which is so critical, could never be developed. And the heart chakra, because of the imbalance with not having a crown chakra working at all, is almost non-existent as well on a conscious level in animals. Almost. They have a little bit. Sometimes, if they're around people or if they're under special circumstances. But still, that means you usurp what the critical element is of what humans are, which is individual creative beings. And since we're individual creative beings and not collective creative beings, that changes the very nature of our relationship with our Creator and with ourselves and with others. As a matter of fact, you've heard me talk about the woes and the terribleness, I'm going aside now right now, of socialism. Why is socialism so bad? Because it's based upon collectivism, which is how animals live. And it ignores the concept of what I just explained, the individual sanctity of humans. It makes humans worse or even below, in some cases, the way animals are. But that's a whole other subject. But it's nonetheless very interesting to correlate how something so political and intellectual can really be placed into this understanding we're gaining about the very basis of how a human being is made. So when somebody says, well, why can't humans be organized and made into a collective? Well, because we're hundreds of millions of years away from ants and bees and even more advanced animal forms. We're just way down the road from there. We are special because we are truly a reflection of our Creator. So here the soul is in this complex problem, and it came up with a personality. Now you could say, well, what is the personality then? Personality, which doesn't have much to do with animals, is a form with a bit of consciousness. It's more form, it's more energy than it is consciousness, but with the indelible sense of consciousness of self-survival, and the, we'll call it, need and desire to be expressive through a little self. It has this need, or finds its life meaningless. And that is extremely painful and suffering for it. So this is what the personality is. It's designed to suffer, designed, I know it sounds terrible, but it's true, designed to control, and designed to deal with a faulty information system that is illusion. Now, how does it deal with the illusional system? Well, any information it gets on a subconscious level that doesn't fit easily in with prior information, it tends to ignore. Now, there's a lot of problems with this personality in doing that, but the first thing it's going to do is try to survive. And if it doesn't ignore the information that doesn't fit in with the prior information that's keeping the person alive and doesn't do it quickly, then it could make a mistake that would be fatal. So for the sake of survival, it eliminates a lot of information that just doesn't jive. The personality, therefore, is rigid in the formation of knowledge. It forms knowledge only, or almost only, on a subconscious level, based upon that knowledge not conflicting with prior knowledge. Wow, you didn't know that, did you? Yeah, that's what the personality does. Now, people say, well, you said something like that in a light-sided meaning, but it isn't as clear. Well, the reason it isn't as clear, in all honesty about that, is that in Chapter 6 of that book, it's a textbook, some things did not clearly get written as much as I would have liked. The book was, other people were involved in helping to put it together, and it was just very, very difficult to get the book to say exactly the right things as I think I could say them today. So I've improved, and other people that I work with have improved. I think we could do a better job. But that was about, we're talking 15 years ago when we were working on the thing. It's a long time ago. And so, for its day and when we created it, I think we did a decent job. But certainly, this information can be better explained, and if we had more room for examples, as I do on this radio show, then people would have a lot better understanding, I think. The examples take huge amounts of text, would make the book into volumes and be very difficult for people to carry around. Probably have to, with computer technology, that's the only way you could probably do it, through electronics, but physically the books would be impossible almost to carry around. All right, so get back to the point. Here we have a personality who says, hey, we exist, because it still recognizes the self, even though the self doesn't really understand the personality very well. We exist to control the flow of information and production of knowledge and the eventual outcome of behavior that keeps us alive. That's number one. Number two, keeps us interested in things. Number three, provides a meaningful, what does that mean? Well, provides an existence in which there is a continuous stimulation of all three of the bodies and minds and thought processes together, leading a person into formulating new and more interesting understandings of the world. So consciousness is sort of growing, to some extent, in the self. And the self becomes the jewel that the personality wants to develop, but it wants to develop the self only as long as the information that comes in does not consistently contradict with its knowledge. Now, here's challenge number one. Challenge number one in leading a more spiritual life is to bring in information that consistently and sometimes significantly contradicts the information that is leading to the knowledge that the personality up to that point has been creating with the information. What am I telling you? I'm telling you that the personality is created to keep us alive, keep us interested in life, keep us feeling in many ways good, and leading a spiritual life does the opposite to the personality. Whoa, didn't know that, did you? Right. Most people don't. So when people say, yeah, I want to lead a more spiritual life, what are they really saying? Well, they're saying they're willing to challenge their subconscious and to bring it into full consciousness, which means literally changing the personality into something else. They have to fuse it with their soul, which is a very difficult process, and change their self into the dominant element in who they are. So most of them is no longer subconscious, but conscious. And the self actually fuses with a part of the alter ego to the soul or angel, which is called the higher self. Now, all that you don't really have to remember, but the important thing here is you're becoming something different. You're no longer a typical human if you're going to lead a more spiritual life. And that's a significant challenge. It's such a big thing that even talking about it as I have just now is not doing it justice. And you can say, but isn't that just the beginning? And yes, it is. So it's no small event in the life of a soul to have an incarnate, a person, one of its incarnates, to say, I want to lead a more spiritual life. It takes hundreds and hundreds, as many as 700 or more, lifetimes, incarnating before some person, as an incarnate of a soul, actually says that and does it. It may come earlier, where it says it but doesn't do it and fails. But as far as actually making an attempt with some degree of success, it could take that many lifetimes because of the nature of the personality. The personality is this almost on and off switch kind of thing that is constantly eliminating any information that doesn't fit its already accumulation of knowledge. Well, how do you grow from that? Not very easily. So it's a great struggle. And that deals with this heart chakra. When a person reaches the point where they say to themselves, the heart chakra and the understanding I gained through my heart chakra is far more important than the knowledge that I have previously had in life, than the meaning that I have been getting from life. And that's probably the biggest part right there. It's far more important than that. Then that person is truly on their way. That's the big change. And when it happens on a material side, because that's where we started from, the most severe levels of initial, we'll call it threat, happened to the personality. We'll see when we come back that even more severe things can happen emotionally or astrally and mentally, but the physical, really for a lot of people, is where the first struggle comes, and it's the most severe that they've had up to that point. There may be more severe things down the line, but for them right then, at that point, it's the most severe thing that they can deal with. Okay, so we're going to come back in approximately 2.5 minutes, and then I'll get much deeper into this whole subject. I realize this has been very conceptual, but I'm going to get down to some more, we'll call it basic understandings, and we'll have more explanations. So we'll be back in 2 minutes and 30 seconds, give or take, from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And I hope that this is an interesting show, because the information I'm going to cover tonight, I really haven't done enough writing about. We were going to do books, whole books on some of these subjects, actually, many years ago. And we've been waylaid by the infusion, we'll call it, of many issues, some of it being quite bad evil, which has really taken from us the ability to deal with these subjects and help all of you to understand. We're still involved in that, by the way, unfortunately. We've become a big target. Now, let me continue on and tell you some things that really you may not understand, but I'm going to try to bring back into the light. The personality, it doesn't want to reveal to itself its own existence. And you can say, well, why not? I mean, it's part of me, right? Why wouldn't I want to know about me? And the reason for that is that the personality actually believes that the self is going to harm it and the self by wanting to include too much contrary information to the survival knowledge that the personality has created. And as soon as there is this sense of threat, the personality shuts down and doesn't let the self get a lot of the information. Now, on a practical sense, I'm going to give you some examples now of how this happens. Let's say that you're having a heated discussion with your spouse, friend, close person, lover, someone who really makes a difference to you. And in the course of that discussion, because this other significant person matters to you, and they have a significant realm of importance to you because you've invested time and energy in your interactions with them, some of the information doesn't jive that they say or that they are doing or whatever. And the personality, to make sure that you don't destroy or ruin or do something to adversely affect the relationship, may prevent you from receiving information which could be created into knowledge which contradicts your need to understand the person. So you hear somebody saying something to you, and you don't hear what they're saying. And you don't want to hear what they're saying because it doesn't help you as a total person now to be able to hold on to the relationship with that person and to want to keep the relationship maybe even. Isn't that weird? But to the personality, the relationship in and of itself is more important than whether or not your understanding of what that relationship is really about is, and whether anything that you on a conscious level care about, because it cares that you just have this in your life and you're not ready, it's not ready to give it up. And this happens all the time, by the way. We become connected to people that we don't want to give up for one reason or another, and then convince ourselves on faulty information to stay in that connection. Because the fear of loss is the fear, of loss of control. The personality doesn't know what if you give this up, what's going to be replacing it, if anything. So this is the way this crazy thing inside of us works. And it does it all the time. And so we gather distortions, illusions, continually about our world that are not truth. They're not truth. They're not light. They're just nonsense, but we go ahead and keep these things going because, to us, the loss, to us on a subconscious level, the loss is worse than the gain would be in getting, we'll say, more accurate knowledge and making ourselves more responsible to both the other person and other people around us because we're afraid that we're going to lose control. All because a part of us wants to constantly be in control. How do you get over that in a physical sense? Well, the physical sense now deals with the material world, and it deals with the amount of energy we use to interact, the amount of energy we use to gain mobility and freedom, all that also is part of interacting with our environment and others in it, but any part of the environment. And interaction is really the mode, we'll say, of growth and of continuation of life in the physical world. We have to be able to do it. So you could say, well, but illusion makes interaction wasteful and destroys great amounts of energy and produces a lot of friction and age and illness and all this other stuff. Yes, it does, but as far as the subconscious side of us is concerned, there could be even greater risks if we choose to go off in a direction which wastes all or most of our energy and provides such a great loss of things that we may not be able to survive. Even though there's an illogic to it, because some of the things that we think we need may be silly things, toys and unusual ways of expressing ourselves, even though it has nothing to do with really ourselves, and ways of making ourselves maybe to feel good for the moment, add some excitement for the moment. These are things that the personality are concerned about. And almost inevitably, they lead to sorrow in the long run. But they may be the main reason that a lot of people actually live. So now, in looking at this model, you can see that you're facing a real challenge, a tremendous challenge, really, just to start with the physical part of us and to lead a more spiritual life. Because as soon as you do that, you're up against this system that the personality is involved in trying to control, in trying to have the security, and trying to keep the things that feel good and not have anything that doesn't feel good, and no. Okay. What then is the solution in a physical sense if you're trying to lead a more spiritual life? Well, the first is to gain an understanding that there's a part of us, all of us, that lives in illusion, that is doing these things to us, and that, for the most part, we don't any longer, as adults, need. Now you could say, whoa, but how do you know that? What if someone's listening to you right now who does need that because they can't be responsible for themselves and they have to be living subconsciously? Well, I can almost guarantee they have already changed the station because the things that I'm saying are so threatening and so blocked that in the first 5 minutes they thought I was talking in a different language altogether. And they understood almost nothing I said, and they don't believe almost anything else. So they're long gone. We don't have to worry about them. I'll catch them in their next life, don't worry. All right. So this is not something that we have to worry about, because those people really aren't listening. Literally. What can you do? What are the ways to get closer in a physical sense to God? Well, let's get back to that heart chakra again. We already know that it's taking some of the information from the lower centers, and it's bringing that information in to what's called a central place where the information can gain, we can gain some understanding spiritually, not just in a material sense, but spiritually, about our Creator. And this can be done either in or out of religion. I'm going to talk about it in ways outside now for the rest of the show. I cover the religious side, and if you're doing that, that's fine. But how do you deal with it outside of religion? Well, some people don't know this, but the fact is that you can directly communicate with God through prayer, but only for praying for others. Don't pray for yourself. Pray for others. I know that's a bitter pill for some people, and people do. And the people, you can disagree with this. That's fine. But why do I suggest that you pray for others rather than yourself? Because prayer for yourself is exactly that. It's to help yourself in some way. And the better way is to pray for things that may involve you doing something, but only in its outcome, successfully for others. Then you'll get more and better response. And what does prayer do? It brings a focus of spiritual thought back to you, breaking through the barriers of the personality. That's the first thing it does. If you've prayed and you've done it correctly, you know what I'm saying is true. The information and knowledge that you receive in prayer, especially about the physical world, becomes almost immediately a benefit if it's not about yourself. And that allows you to then become more integrated and interactive so that you can carry out more virtuous ways of serving others while your thought and connection becomes conveyable to those that you are praying about. So prayer should be followed with some level of interaction with those that you're praying for. This is different than organized religion teaches, and I understand that. Most of the time, people pray and they say, well, no, it's up to God, because that's what my religion says. But you're part of God. You're a co-creator. And you need to follow up with doing things so that you and others become part of God's mission. It doesn't mean you're going to be the main character. It doesn't mean you're going to do it all alone. It may mean that you do very little, if anything. But just the fact that you're doing focuses God's thoughts more on to those that you wish to be of service to through your prayers. But you have to do something as well. Now, there's many, many ways to serve others, but you have to do something, because that gets into the crown chakra. If you're not going to involve your crown chakra and you do a lot of prayer, eventually you're going to clog up and close down your heart chakra, leaving yourself open to heart attacks, high blood pressure, and many other serious diseases, actually. And even interactively with the kidneys and the liver and everything. Because the heart doesn't work, then nothing works right, and vice versa. So it's important, then, to recognize that there's a responsibility in prayer that goes a lot, lot further than sitting alone in a room or with others, even. Does group prayer work? Yes. Works better than individual prayer. The reason being that the group can then take actionable interaction, I should say, that with co-creation to be of some service. That's where it really works. And you might say, okay, well, if prayer is good, what else? Okay. Well, you can educate yourself, which you're doing right now by listening to this show. This is not, by any stretch, the only way to educate yourself. There's a vast resource out there of books and other kinds of materials that are spiritual. And you can read about those things. It's also spiritual to read things that promote truth and justice and real individual creativity and individual liberty. These are the things that are so crucial to being of service, because they help to clarify enough of the information so that the illusions are no longer accepted by the personality subconsciously, because you're overriding the personality with a conscious choice to sense and understand information that the personality normally eliminates. You're doing it through a thing called spiritual discipline, which is focusing in on each piece of information from each center that the information comes from on a conscious level, and you're bypassing the personality. It's called spiritual discipline. Each time you do that, you eliminate this crazy system, which is in place, of illusion replacing real knowledge. An illusion adding to false knowledge that the personality has created as its series of lies. There's some truth in it that the personality creates, but most of it is partially untrue and selfish. The more untrue and the more selfish the personality makes of the information that it gains in illusion, the more the self diminishes and the greater the personality is to becoming spiritually disorganized and maybe even psychologically, in psychological terms, disorganized. Once that happens, then the personality develops in a psychological and spiritual sense a personality disorder. Those are serious because it means the personality now has really gotten off track and the self is diminished to a significant level, and that's a bad place to be. The person is mostly living a subconscious existence, oftentimes with very bad outcomes. All right, so these are the ways that we can begin with. Education, then I suggest meditation. What is meditation? Meditation is a way of self-examination, first of past actions and interactions made, oftentimes by the subconscious personality, and bring them into a conscious state. That's called reflection. Eventually, for some people, they take their meditation to the level of contemplation. And when they get to that level, whoa, now they're thinking ahead before something takes place to see if they can come up with a way of remaining conscious through their self over the subconscious actions of the personality. One of the ways to check on it is while you are involved in an interaction with your environment or another person, you look at and examine all the information you're receiving from each center individually and then collectively, and to sense directly whether or not the information is getting put into knowledge. And this takes considerable amounts of training, because most of us eliminate almost all, 98, 99, and those kinds of high percentages of the information coming through our senses. Why do we do it? Well, because it seems efficient and the personality doesn't need it to keep us alive and to reach a meager kind of life in which the material side of life is literally just gaining more use of energy in form, which are things, and in action. This is what the personality wants us to do, and this is the way most people tend to live. I'm suggesting something entirely different, a whole new model of existence, and how to overcome the tremendous resistance there is to living this way. And you could say, well, you've had chosen spiritual discipline. Yeah, I'm just talking about getting now to spiritual discipline. I'm not going to be talking a lot today about doing spiritual discipline, because that's a little more involved. I'm just talking about getting us there. This is challenges of leading a more spiritual life, not necessarily challenges of leading the most spiritual life. That's a different show. Okay, so we can see now that there's real science to what I'm suggesting. It's not some kind of metaphysical, occult, very mystical kind of way of dealing with it. Because those ways take too long, and they don't apply as much to us as people today as they did to our prior incarnations. Hundreds and thousands of years ago, we didn't have the intellect to understand the things I'm talking to you about right now. Those incarnations of us would have had too much trouble in me teaching it, probably, and in you understanding it, if I could teach it. So you see, we've developed. And in our present level of development, some of us are now capable of doing what I'm suggesting. That's why we have a show on it tonight, right? This is really fascinating stuff. I know it's very interesting to me. I've been through it. I've watched other people, a lot of other people, attempt to go through this. And I understand when they fail and why, and have great sorrow for those that do, because I know it's a tough thing, a tough part of existence to try this and not be able to manage it. That's why I'm here. And you can even call me. You can write me if you have any problems, because I recognize this is a real challenge. It's not something just to put on paper as a word. It's a real deal problem. All right, so what else can we do? We went through the meditation, education, etc. Well, one of the things is to look for others who are attempting to do this. This process is so challenging that for the most part, except in the most rudimentary beginning stages, it requires others to be helping. It's sort of like a 12-step program, but you don't have to be an alcoholic, of course, or a drug user or whatever. It's you need others, because the things that challenge you may not challenge your next door neighbor or someone else that you know close. And you can rely upon their not being threatened sometimes by the things that do threaten your personality, because different things threaten different personalities. So a group of people at the beginning of this is very important, because one person can help another, particularly if they understand the stuff that I'm talking about and teaching tonight. Then you can really get a leg up on the situation. So create your own group of people. Call it whatever you want. I don't care. Spiritual group, fine. Call it something else. You know? But get together with a group of people to help promote the beginning of this process. However, don't keep it just about improving yourself, because then you get the same clogging of the heart chakras, and in a short order, the group will fail. Instead, have that always as part of the purpose of the group, but also look to use each step of the way the newfound understanding, the new consciousness that you've developed. Understanding consciousness could be literally used as the same word, to serve others in some beneficial way. And make sure that that benefit to the others leads them down a similar road to the one that you're taking, so that someday those others might become part of your own group or form their own. You see what I'm saying? This is a soul level of development. Spiritual life really is about the soul. It's not about the personality. You can see that. The personality wants no part of it. It'll fool you. It'll do anything it can to prevent you from doing this, because it doesn't make sense to it until the self is in charge, and that can take weeks, months, even years before there's much of a change. Okay. So becoming part of a group that is doing the things I'm suggesting would be a great assistance. Start your own if you can't find one already available. And even if you can, you still have the right to start your own. And this really helps. Align yourselves as a group with other groups, if you can. Do whatever you can to provide assistance so that others can lead a more spiritual life as well. This is really the promise of God, because God chose to do this itself. It chose to give up its own integral self so that there can be life, which then eventually participate in co-creation in individual creations that are done with others. Remember, we're not collectives. We are still individuals, even though we're functioning within groups. We have to be able to build on the old model, but in new ways, and not become part of the old model of collective, like animals, because that's really dark. It becomes evil when it's in a human form. It's okay for animals. They're supposed to be doing that. All right. So hopefully that gets us to at least the physical side of things. Now, I think at this point, I will give you a couple minutes to let all that mull through you. I just want to mention a couple things. First of all, you know about Fai Chi Desik, hopefully, if you've heard the show before. And we're still working on getting it out. We had a glitch this week. One of the unique things about Fai Chi Jizik, it has 61 herbs in it. And these herbs are not that strange. I mean, they're part of the pharmacopoeia, whatever. They've been around a long time. They're even protected, your right to use them and our right to sell them and make them, under the 1994 Deshe Act, which is good. Otherwise, in the present environment, I don't know if we could be even doing this. And we still might not, because a lot of these rights are disappearing. But let me go on. These 61 herbs and two nutraceuticals are being made for us in a very old way, but a way that's not common practice today, because it takes a lot more time and a lot more energy, much more costly. And we're actually taking it to a new level, and that has not been done consistently with all the herbs at the same time, making them work very strongly together. Now, the good news about this is that it's a great idea. The bad news is that it's expensive. It takes a lot of time on the part of the manufacturer, who's right now a great company that's working with us. Their name is Raw Deal. They're a wholesale manufacturer, literally, of what we're doing. But the biggest part of what we're dealing with this last week is that because there's such human manipulation involved in the production of the herbs, and such a long process, and the process itself has almost nothing that kills microbes, at least not as efficiently as some of the other methods that are presently used today, that a few of the herbs that we got, which we test, the people we work with test them by quarantining them so that they can grow any microbes that might be bad. And then after that, checking under a microscope and in other ways, see if they have produced culturing, is one of the ways, to see if they have produced any bad microbes. And some of these herbs were not up to our standard, and so they go back. And then we have to wait for the manufacturer to make them over again. And they don't have them on the shelf because we're the only people, really the only ones, making it this way and making them the way they're. And so they have to remake them for us. So that's what happened. And so we got delayed by another couple of weeks or more. I'll let you know for sure next week. But they're really, really working on it because they know that this is delaying everything. And it's sort of like the weakest chain in a link. Whatever the longest period of time is to make even one of the herbs, that's how long the whole thing takes. So that was a letdown. The good news is, of course, we caught it. And we recognized that this happened. I think it's because of the nature of the problem that this took place. Not to completely excuse them, but the manufacturer made the herb, and probably when they tested it, it was fine because they hadn't quarantined it quite as long as we did. And so, but there wasn't enough growth of the microbes to be able to be detected until we received them and then checked them. That's assuming that the seals and everything were intact, et cetera, and I think they were. And that the material, what they put them in didn't have some contamination. And that's something I do worry about, is how sterile that process is. Unfortunately, there's a certain standard that the industry presently is using, which for our purposes may not be high enough. So we have to look at that as well, in terms of even containers and everything else. This is not an easy subject, but it's one that really has to be addressed. We are really on, I guess you would call it the bleeding edge, and I've used this word before, of creating herbal formulas. It's why they work so well, but it's also why it's such a pain and so expensive and difficult and time-consuming to make them. Believe me when I tell you that most herbal formulas are made in a fraction of the time, at a fraction of the cost of what we use. So 5-Chi-Gesic should be on its way in a week or two. We were about to go into manufacture of it next week. And we will be delayed a couple of weeks, I think. I know that's a letdown. It's a letdown to us. But we're still pursuing it, and it's coming. And just be aware that we are very, very cautious We would never put anything out there that might have even the slightest kind of what we consider to be a contamination of anything. Now, there may be, and honestly, there may be lots of herbs that actually have far more stuff in them, wrong stuff, than what we're talking about here. But that's not the standard that we function under. Okay, so let's move ahead. And let me tell you, let's move to the development of the spiritual life in a astral sense. Now, this is a more developed piece of ourselves. Those of you who have been already leading a more spiritual life are going to be probably more interested in this next section, next sections. But it will still help everybody to have an understanding. So don't turn me off yet. Okay. If we're dealing with the astral body, the senses are much, much more hidden from the self. Not so much more from the personality. This is really strange. This is where it gets weird. The personality has almost, not the same, but almost the same amount of sense of astral sense and mental sense as it does physical sense, because it's located in the mental dimension, not the physical. And so it's somewhat isolated. But our self gets the information directly from the senses in the physical body, the astral body, and the mental body. And while we are physically alive, the physical senses overwhelm the information that the self gets, provided the personality is allowing it to happen and the self is demanding that it happen. So the self is actually overwhelmed by the physical senses, but the personality is not. Now, there is slight differences, but it isn't nearly what it is to the self. So the personality actually does have a pretty good understanding, if it chooses to, of our astral feelings. Now, here's the problem. The personality, most of the time, doesn't like some of the feelings it has. Because it has glamours, which are fixed desires, that aren't being met, and that cause like an itching sensation in the astral body. And it doesn't like that feeling, so it gets rid of it. It has anxieties, which are the anticipation of some type of pain. And it doesn't like that, so it blocks those out. It ignores them. And it has all kinds of fears, which it doesn't care for. So it blocks those out. And all this information that's coming in, whatever it doesn't like, it just says, okay, I won't include that in my knowledge so that I won't know about it, and that won't get shared with myself. The self part being the conscious part of the person. And this is a weird situation. You got a personality that is being flooded with all this stuff, and it's just blocking it off. It blocks it off even to itself. Not to one of the self part of us. It does that too. But even to the personality, it blocks itself. Because it doesn't want to know about it. Now, if it blocks it too much, it becomes disordered. Then it also becomes not only a spiritual problem, but a psychological one. And that's a big problem today. A lot of people that have that issue in their life. It's a significant psychological problem. But it also is blocking off the information to itself, to the self part of it. You know? And so we consciously don't know our feelings very well. So we don't know the feelings that the personality is blocking completely, and we don't know, which may cause it to become disordered, and then we don't know the feelings that the personality is keeping subconsciously, but it's not blocking it completely, unless the personality allows us to feel that as well. So there's two different levels of not knowing our own feelings. And that's a bad situation, because the information of content and feelings is more complex, more dimensionally complex, than its physical information. And it has a lot more a lot more impact on our existence in the long run. I know you said, well, isn't it the physical stuff that keeps us physically alive and the astral stuff just sort of makes us feel good or bad about it? Well, somewhat true, except this whole meaning issue in life is so important that both to the self and the personality and to all aspects of our existence, that if you start blocking out feelings, life becomes meaningless very quickly. And complex issues like the interactions with other human beings, especially, or any living thing, take on a very sour note. And people have disastrous kinds of interpersonal relationships. So you see that it really becomes the big gorilla in the room that people tend to ignore. Men do this more than women because the astral world is a feminine-based world. Feelings are a feminine-based type of sense and energy, sense of energy and energy itself. It's a more feminine energy. And men are more foreign to it because of their nature. They have a leaning against it. And they block feelings more easily, so they're more susceptible to certain kinds of disruptions caused by this cutting off of feeling. Especially in interpersonal relationships, they may literally be somewhat clueless about some things, where women may be less so. But this is only in relative terms. If we take it in the human condition in general, human beings are a mess from this right now. So bad that they have actually connected the feeling to a thought and made it so that the feeling is more dominant than their thinking apparatus. It's not supposed to be that way, but that's how we have evolved. And that's a terrible evolutionary factor because it is what directly opens the door to evil. And it's a terrible, terrible thing. As long as that door is open, it allows evil literally to infiltrate the physical world. And it allows evil to become, we'll say, active and operable in the astral and physical worlds on a planet. It prevents the planet from becoming sacred. So this is a big deal. Okay, so what are we going to do about that now? Now we've got a whole new set of criteria. I've got astral senses that the personality has pretty good sense of if it chooses, but the self has almost none. Just about very difficult for us to really get a lot of sense while we're physically alive of our astral senses. Now, granted, once by definition we are alive astrally, which means that the consciousness is focused in the astral senses, then yeah, the astral senses become just as strong, if not stronger, actually, they're stronger than the physical senses were in relative terms while we are physically alive. The energy isn't as dense, it doesn't hit the centers as much, but because it's more complex, there's more dimensionality to it, and it's moving at a much faster speed, it actually is more energetic. So people, in an astral sense, what they feel astrally has more significance than physical senses do to us here. And it helps them to become more spiritual, to have more significance, because more gets through to the self. The personality cannot block as much because of the strength of the astral sense. And so you're more, the chances of becoming more spiritual after death are much greater than while you're physically alive. This is a fact, and it's true. It's proven out for those who have astrally traveled. I know that's true. But and if you read what I've written, you'll see why it's true. Okay, so this is a complex situation because now we're talking about how do we lead a more spiritual life in an astral sense, literally. And this takes a lot more spiritual discipline because the sense is more hidden to the self while we're physically alive. It's more difficult to deal with once it's unhidden. It's more threatening to the personality than physical senses are. And the personality has more control over it in relationship to the self. So it's stronger in its ability to block it. Wow. Now we're in trouble. And that's where a lot of people get in trouble in spiritual life, is trying to deal with their feelings rather than just the physical world. The physical world is a challenge, and there's a lot to give up, and your physical things is a lot. But the astral life is even more difficult. How are we going to deal with that? Well, the same things can be employed, but in a somewhat more complex way. Let's take them. Learning. Let's say we're going to use education. Well, how do you educate yourself about feelings? Okay. Well, you have to develop a thing called empathy. And you need to use the empathy when you are most threatened. Almost everybody has a sense of empathy. People who don't are seriously emotionally disturbed, and some of them are even psychopathic and sociopathic, etc. But for the rest of us, empathy is there. The problem is timeliness. Empathy does little good if it can only be used when the personality is not threatened by its own feelings. And that's the way most people operate. I'll be empathic when I'm not threatened. But most times when empathy is most needed is when it's involved in close interactions with people. And it's at those times that we become selfish and the personality blocks our feelings from ourselves, therefore our integration of our senses, which is the five lower senses, which is what empathy is, go away. And we lose our empathy. Let me give you an example of this. It's very simple, really. I mean, how many times has there been a major this or that disaster with people you've never known, and suddenly you have tremendous pouring of empathy from yourself and others, and you're trying to do things, and you're going, and you, it causes many kinds of very virtuous interactions, etc. But then you go home, and you have a terrible fallout with your significant other, or with a pet even, or whatever, and you become a monster with no feelings. Why? For exactly the reasons I explained. Personality gets fearful, says, oh, got to control, and blah, blah, blah. Very little of the feelings are shared with the self. There's no empathy, and boom, you're in big trouble. Big, big trouble. So it's keeping empathy flowing when the personality is threatened. That's the trick. And this is where we get into contemplation. But contemplation on a new level because of the complexity of the information that is astrally around us. You can't just contemplate like you would in a physical sense how you're going to share or cooperate in your interactions in the future. This is far beyond sharing and cooperation. The contemplation has to include a series of back and forth motions because empathy involves direction of energy, back and forth motions carried out for a number of minutes or maybe even an hour or longer with another person. Wow, that's way different than thinking about something in the physical world and how you might interact better there. This is a much more complex situation. And there has to be timing involved. You wait and listen and experience, and then they do, and back and forth. It's almost like a dance. It's the best way to describe it, and I have sometimes said it that way. And this dance that you're doing back and forth can't be stopped. It's got to go to its natural level of completion. And it's dependent upon both people doing it. Whereas you can be more singular in your thought process, contemplating in the physical world, you can't do it in the astral. So your astral feelings, your emotional feelings, some people would say, have to be done in a kind of dance, back and forth. And You have to contemplate the dance before you actually are in it if you're going to try to build empathy. Because once you're in it, there's no way getting around the personality. It just simply grabs a hold of you, and those of you who are who've tried this know what I'm talking about, and you lose it, and it doesn't help to start doing something then. You have to do it beforehand, and you have to do it in a complex way of including the back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, until you reach the point where there is what? A common movement of the energy that is consistent between the two of them, that's called love. So you have to reach a loving outcome, which is mutual, in the interaction, in both the contemplation and then in the delivering of it, or the actual event or events, in order to lead a more astral spiritual life. Now, you can see that this is a lot more to ask from somebody than the physical stuff. This is really tough. And many people fail at this, even though they try to do it. Now, in the past, the explanations for how to do this have not been maybe clear enough. And I hope that now maybe I'm clarifying it, although I've written articles and taught this before, but to only a few. Now, hopefully more are hearing it. Maybe they can try it. The challenges are to not become subconscious, to not become self-focused. What does it mean to become self-focused? Well, then you're no longer exchanging back and forth. Self-focus is all about yourself. You did this, you did that, and I don't care about you. Well, then you have no empathy, no chance of developing empathy. And you will just create the same effect in the other person. They'll become self-focused. You get nowhere. Except maybe a very bad fight. So this is the challenge. Getting over the challenge also means that eventually, after you do this on the heart side, which is what I was just talking about, you have to convert it, just like in the physical body, into the crown chakra and make it co-creative in service. You and others have to interact together to serve using super empathy, which is both of the centers together, the spiritual centers, heart and crown chakra, so that others are creating more love as well. Very, very tough thing to do. And it absolutely, positively requires a group. You can kind of get by at the very, very base levels without others in the most basic challenges of leading a physical, more spiritual life. You can absolutely not achieve it. Cannot without doing it with others for a astral spiritual life. You'll never succeed. Never. I know a lot of people are going to be pretty upset with me for saying that because they don't want to do that. But that's the way it is, guys. And the interesting thing is that the people that you choose, if you're at the astral level, now you've got to choose people that are at your similar level of response. So don't go out and find a bunch of people who say, look, I'll pay you all $10 a day to come and sit with me so you'll be my group, even though you have no clue what I'm doing or what I'm talking about. That will do nothing for you. Nothing. The people have to be similar to your own level of consciousness so that you can respond together. Because you're going to be directing energy and movement of energy together, not alone like you would more physically. That's the complexity of astral energy. And it's going to require a lot more to achieve this. Co-creation, though, is tremendously rewarding once it is achieved on a group level, astrally. Remember, you're still individually creating virtue. It's just that you're doing so in a dance where all of you are taking a part to make sure that the movement of the energy is cohesive and not destructive and not self-canceling, which it can very well and very easily become. And then the super empathy is gone, and you've lost the true spiritual meaning of life at that level. Wow. Okay, so this is a key element. Can you do it just by will? No. Will does not work. Why not? I can't just, I'm going to do it. Because your personality is dominant and the will of the self is meager in comparison. Won't work. The will of a group of people can make it work. Sometimes. But the will of an individual is not strong enough. Personality will almost always have its way. And you'll be lamenting your failures rather than enjoying any bliss of your success. Okay. Let's move on because I won't have enough time otherwise to that of the mental senses. The mental senses are, if we're talking about the astral senses being subtle, the mental senses are extremely hard for the self to sense. How many of you out there have actually sensed your mental body? It almost seems like an oxymoron, right? Sense the mental body? What is that? Okay. Because you don't even know what I'm talking about. But if you start doing this, you will. You can actually sense thought of others and yourself. Sensing your own thought, which is the beginning of the exercises, the beginning of leading a more spiritual life, is some challenge in itself. First of all, you cannot have astral or physical senses dominating in illusion yourself or your personality preventing those senses from getting through to yourself in order to gain any sort of mental sense. So you've got to be able to not be in illusion, both physically and astrally, before you can really do much about trying to sense mentally. But once you have achieved some of these great, we'll say, improvements in leading a more spiritual life physically and astrally, you can now move to the big one. The biggie is the mental. And now you start sensing your thought. Now, what does it feel like to sense yourself on? You know, like, what does that mean? Because, you know, I can know what a feeling is like because a feeling is a feeling. What does it feel like to sense a thought? A thought, in a feeling sense, is far more subtle, but far more meaningful to the self. So what it feels like is like these huge senses of aha. The few that you may have had in your lifetime, and they really are few, probably if you're in your 40s, you've had maybe 50 to 100 ahas in your lifetime. If you start mentally disciplining yourself, you have that much in a day. After a while. Maybe a week to a month, and then eventually a day. And how big of a deal is that? Well, if you can remember the last one you had, if you can, of the ahas, because even the memory of them is hard to keep, they provide so much meaning in life that they're far more impactful than any feeling is or any physical sensations. You know what I'm saying? I hope you know what I'm saying, because I'm trying to draw this example from your own experiences. The problem is that even though you may have had 50 to 100 ahas, they're extremely difficult to remember. Because not only is mental sense difficult to sense, it's also difficult to remember. Because you don't have enough of them to keep the memory intact. In order to truly remember them, I mean truly, You need to have them 60% of the time that you exist. Wow, that's a lot. That's more than 100 a day. That's probably many hundreds. So what about somebody who's beyond that? Someone who's like 70, 80% of the time. They're living a totally different existence. Their existence is one of aha every 5 or 10 minutes or 15 minutes. They have a totally different existence, but they may also have great sense of conscious foreboding and concern for everything in existence, and maybe worried, because they are so aware of their thoughts and the thoughts of others. Now let's take these two in two different orders. The thoughts of oneself are about the development of usually the higher, not the lower, self, and the fusion of the personality with the soul. So it's pretty much a self-analytical and oftentimes critical view of the total amount of all the things that we're talking about tonight, and a bunch more, and how much they're taking place. This is the first part of sense of thought. But it almost always is connected to the sense of thought of others. So the person, the advanced person in this case, is able to first understand the thoughts of others, and then is able to choose how to co-create to help those thoughts of others to become more meaningful to them. You become what is known as a teacher of greatness, or a big kind of teacher, just by developing a sense of your mental senses. Now, most people that teach are not like that. They don't teach from that perspective, because they can't truly sense the thought of others or of themselves. They can't teach from the perspective I'm trying to describe. But nonetheless, those who can do, and they can teach from that perspective. How does that affect them and others? Well, there's tremendous joy and beyond in being able to do that, because there's a gift that can be given to others, a much greater understanding, to a different kind of level of teaching than the average person who is even a spiritual teacher might be able to do. So it's a good thing to do. What else is there about spiritual sense and being able to allow the higher self to intervene into the process of the personality trying to cover up this thought? Well, the fact is that once you overcome the astral, the personality becomes, in an odd sense, stronger and weaker. It becomes stronger it becomes weaker in its ability to block and prevent the senses from reaching the self, which is a very good thing, because by that point you want to be fully consciously doing everything as much as you can. And there's another part of this. The personality also becomes stronger because it starts to fuse with the soul. Now, how does that happen? Well, the personality exists in the lower monastic, on the first, second, and third sub planes of those dimensions. And it's within this, it's actually on the fourth dimension, but it's the first and second and third sub planes. And it uses the lowest part of conceptual thought to handle all of its, we'll say, creations of knowledge. It's literally on a pedal called the knowledge pedal, and it's the lowest of the knowledge pedals of the higher mind. These pedals are energy beings that hold and retain the energy of thought long enough for the personality to collect it and use it. However, the interesting thing is that the soul has some control over everything above this one energy pedal of energies. And all that the soul has is what the personality needs to have if the self is becoming dominant over the personality, because it's already worked in the other two lower bodies. And it now is integrating information using these higher concepts. At first, they're individually spiritual concepts that affect mostly the person themselves. Eventually, they become soul concepts and, we'll say, planetary concepts that affect all living things on the whole planet and beyond. It becomes very big. And what the personality starts doing when it joins with the soul is it starts to create a thing called love wisdom, the giving of wisdom to produce the effect or virtue of truth in others. It's a beautiful thing when it's done properly. And it's all done with the personality really becoming something bigger than it was to begin with. It's actually going back to and joining with the soul, even before the personal self is going back to joining with the soul. Interestingly, if it's done in unison with the self, at the same exact instant that they both rejoin with the soul in the monastic world, instead of the personality literally vanishing and disintegrating while the self becomes part of the soul, they both go back and join with the soul. It's an amazing thing if it happens. And that's a real big deal. For eons, personalities have not gone back to the soul. There's some loss of information. All the stuff that was personality did wrong is kind of lost. And the self goes, the conscious part of us, the part that we identify as us, goes back to being our soul. That's fine. Personality, though, doesn't survive. But it doesn't matter to us because we exist. Personality was always subconscious anyway. But in these more advanced periods, if a person really gains a huge amount of mental sense, even the personality doesn't have to go away. It can fuse with the soul and not... It doesn't have to do it in total. Say half of it confuses with the soul, or a quarter. Any part that fuses with the soul is a good thing. And while that's taking place, the lower self is fusing simultaneously with the higher self, and literally, bridges are being built in the higher mind to the lower mind, and the higher mind from the soul to the solar angel, and all kinds of great things. It's called the rainbow bridge, a bridge of colored lights are being built. Just huge changes are literally taking place in what we consider to be a person, changing them into a super person. And the challenge of doing this is that the personality has less control once you reach the monastic part of it, but this is going to sound strange. People that are doing this generally hold themselves back by connecting themselves to others that are not usually as advanced because they're becoming teachers, etc. And they won't allow themselves to move ahead until they take on the challenges that others are having and help them first. That's a great sacrifice, but that's how it works. Because you've got to learn to live, not for yourself, but truly for others who are learning to eventually live that way too. It doesn't mean you give up your individuality. You are actually becoming a greater individual, but an individual of a super being, not an individual of a human being. A human being is extremely limited because it has this personality, which is off doing its thing because it's subconscious to itself. The super being has no personality. It is just a higher self of great, enormous proportions that is joining with another great being. And the two beings are really, it's called a cosmic marriage. The two beings are really just becoming one being. Amazing stuff is going on. That super being, other being, is sometimes referred to as a solar angel. But there are other names for it. So Some people call it our alter soul or alter ego. But there's lots of this. Okay. So we're running out of time. I don't want to run out. Let me finish this off. In order to reach these challenges and to achieve these results, each of us must learn to give up parts of our selfishness. What is selfishness? Selfishness is a self that has been, we'll say, abused by the personality. Why does the personality do that? Well, the personality is thoughtless. It is loveless. It is uncooperative at times. It wasn't made to be those things because the soul is giving us as a total being, including ourself, the opportunity to change the personality by giving us a challenge of, we'll say, battling some of these propensities that the personality has to have to begin with, or we wouldn't survive. So, oddly, the things that keep us initially alive become our nemesis. And many people think the nemesis is outside of them, when really it's inside. People with pretty bad personality disorders almost always believe that everyone outside is the problem because they project it onto them. But the real problem is inside. It's inside. It's the problem between self and personality. And maybe their interactions with people haven't been so great. But that's not the issue. The issue is inside. How do we overcome all these issues? Well, by all the things I suggested. And probably the single most important thing is to recognize the nature of who you really are. And that's what this show has been about. We are not who we think we are. Who we think we are is the illusion we create to not understand how much illusion we really are in. The more you're willing to face the illusion you're in, the faster and more complete the process will be to leading a more spiritual life and a far more meaningful life and be closer, much closer to God, a real co-creator with the Creator, an amazing, amazing, phenomenal result in the process of becoming spiritual. Well, I hope this show tonight has made some sense to you. And one of the things that I would like you all to do is to sort of maybe make a little graph of everything I said, because piecemeal, it may make some sense, but you need to try to bring it all together. So I would suggest that you kind of chart this whole thing out if you can, and see if tomorrow it still makes sense to you. And, you know, you can communicate with me if, you know, you can email me or something, if you seem to have lost certain pieces or whether. We'll try to get some information back to you if you've lost it. The other thing you can do is re-listen to the show, because that's the advantage you have. You can, after once it's put up, you can go ahead and re-listen to it, and hopefully that'll be of some help. Okay, try that. We are out of time for right now. I hope this has been helpful. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.